You're listening to The Dan Nichols Show.
On The Dan Nichols Show this week, a very good chance we will only be speaking Greek because my guest today, as part of a storied football career, has a stint in my adopted home by marriage. He's also played across South Africa, played in other parts of Europe, represented Bafana Bafana, and arrives on the show today looking distinctly Greek, kind of boy band member if you combine the late 80s denim with rather more hair gel than he probably needs. But he can pull it off because he's effortlessly cool. He's the man I know as El Stiga. Luis Figo calls him El Stiga as well. One of the great footballers of modern times in South Africa. Now a bit of a television starlet and the Roman Abramovich of Botswana. What does that mean? We'll find out during the course of the show. Welcome, Stanton Fredericks.
Dan.
Tikanitas.
Ero de mila elinika.
It's one of the many links we have, loving golf, loving a good glass of wine, and then having this connection to Greece. And it's one we've spoken of many times. And it's probably, now that your career has been done for a few years on the field, something you appreciate even more, that football has given you the chance to go to places like Greece and have this cultural experience, not just the football experience.
Yeah, it's just awesome. I think I always mention this, that football, in many ways, has saved me. From my background, which is most footballers' backgrounds, you either have a choice of becoming a gangster, violence in the wrong path, or you travel with football. And football has allowed me to live in three different countries. And I say just understanding a different culture. Just being around different people, just getting on a plane, you know, that has certainly opened my horizons. And in turn, it's given my family an opportunity to escape poverty, you know. So I've forever been indebted to football. But and like you say, it's given me an opportunity to see different countries.
Look, in fairness, I think you would have made a very good gangster. I don't think you dismissed that entirely. There was great potential there and probably some residual disappointment.
Why do I set myself up to this abuse anyway?
Tell me about that background, because the Stiga we know today, he is this super cool guy on TV calling football, and we look back and we know the career and all the success that you have had as a footballer. And retrospectively, it always looks quite simple and was always meant to be, but that is very rarely the case. And a young Stanton Fredericks as a teenager, having, yes, some very obvious football talent from a young age, but also in a social environment where success was certainly not guaranteed. In fact, it was the exception to the rule for many of your peers, I would imagine.
Yeah, it was very different because I have a single parent, mum, in an environment where it could easily go south, you know. So she was always protective around me. Fortunately, sport was the by time, and football was not where I seen myself. With the mother just being very protective, it's always schoolwork, schoolwork, schoolwork. You're doing nothing. You have to matriculate. I only started moving in the football spaces after I matriculated. I matriculated a year earlier than normal because of my intellect. Don't judge me as a footballer. Yeah, I was 17 years old when I matriculated. And thereafter, I went to Wits. And very quickly, 2 years later, became a professional player, you know, so it happened very quick. It wasn't.
So, how much football had you played up until that point?
So, I played a lot of football in the local leagues, but the local league was just that. It wasn't Wits University, which was back then, if you were in Wits, that was the development or academy structure to be in. Mm-hmm. The likes of Bradley Carnell, Lovis Motlala, Junaid Hartley, that would go on to represent Bafana, as well as it used to be Chiefs' hunting ground. If you've done well at Wits, you go to Kaiser Chiefs, you know. So it happened very quickly for me, and it was never the path that I set out for myself.
And yet it's one that you found your way onto with a whole lot of guidance, it sounds like, from your mum. Tell me about her and the person she is.
Yes, yeah, so like you say, it's not as easy as you think it is, but I always say in that environment there was a support structure. A support structure when I say, did you eat? Did you do your homework? Did you have a plate of food? Where my friends that I was playing with didn't have that. So they would sit, and the minute the rules in our household, it was my grandmother and my mother and myself, in the flat in Nuclear. This is in Johannesburg, right? And before it's dark, I need to be in the house. So you see, so that support system allowed you to then eventually escape the situation. So if you didn't have that, if I never had that, it's easy to stay in the dark. Okay, what do? Let's go and fight with these guys. Let's go and steal this. Let's go and steal that. You know, so I'm forever indebted for the support structure that I had in place.
They do sound like formidable women, but also particularly, and we see so much of it sadly in South Africa, this single parent household, and a lot of young South African men growing up without that father figure. Yeah. You can identify with that. So you had enormously strong mums, but I also know that this is shaped who Stanton is as a dad.
100%. So obviously that experience, and football will take you away from that. And psychologically, you don't grow up in a what we call a solid home foundation with a mother, with a father, with a sister, with a brother. You know, so when you live your life, you don't aim for that because you don't know it, you haven't seen it, you haven't experienced it, and that is why I think I only got married when I was 30 years old. I didn't really see myself as a family man. I was fortunate enough to meet my now wife very early, before the fame came. And then football distracts you, and then you could easily find yourself with a child out of wedlock, with getting married to a Russian, because you're playing in Russia. You know, it could easily go south, but fortunately, the fundamentals, the principles kind of guided me, and eventually got married, settled down. And then my wife's family was very stable. So that became my extended family. And then you start to see, okay, this is what the norm should be. And fortunately, it eventually panned out like that.
Now you've learned a lot from them. I think it probably works both ways. But you have this this great family of yours and this terrific career to look back on that kicked off really when you got to Wits. When did you start to get a sense that, you know what, maybe football might just be the ticket forward? This might be what gives Stanton Fredericks his meaning and definition to the working world.
Yes, so when I matriculated, I got an opportunity to work at Liberty Life. So I attended, they had a clerical college for 6 months. I ended top of the class. I was posted at Liberty Life first. So I had a taste of corporate for 6 months. But during that 6 months, I made the under-20 national team. And we played, the first tournament was COSAFA in Lesotho. We went to the final. And when I came back home, I told my mom, I said, Mom, I think I want to try this thing called football. She says, and this is the support I speak about. She says, if you feel you want to do it, my child, you do it. Now, I'm used to getting a salary at Liberty Life. So now you're going back to not earning a dime. And my mother said, listen, I'll support you, whatever you need. The little that I have will cover you. You know, and I think that is where it all turned around for me. Making the under-20 national team, went on to play in the under-20 World Cup. And then you're coming up against France in your group. And France has Thierry Henry, Nicolas Anelka, David Trezeguet, William Gallas. And they have signed for Juventus. Benny McCarthy just went to Ajax. And then you say, listen, I think I'm in a space where I need to give it my all, and there could possibly be a future here.
Because Thierry Henry often speaks of how he played against Stanton Fredericks as being that moment where he realized he'd made it.
Oh, my word. Yeah. Yeah. So you get that platform. And then, and the beauty of sport and football is the minute you cross that white line, we are all equal. You know, it doesn't matter where you come from, who do you play for, what's your background, how you grew up. We are all equal, and you have an opportunity to say, okay, I can do this, you can do that. Let's see who becomes the winner at the end of the 90 minutes.
You had the passion for it. You clearly had the talent as well. It was still a bit of a gamble, though. You had this job at Liberty. You decided, no, with your mum's blessing, let's have a crack at it. Yeah. At what point then did the investment start showing a return? Did you realize, yep, I think this is the right decision?
Yeah, so my first salary, I'll never forget, but it's Wits University, was $1,800. it was 50% of what I was earning.
Per year.
Honestly.
Paid in coins.
But you know, when I look back, I never done it for the money. Like when we sat there, I'll never forget. So now you need somebody to look after you. Now there's no dad. But my very good friend, Junaid Hartley's dad, was like, okay. I asked him, I said, listen, when I go speak to Mr. Slosh, Ronnie Slosh, was running Wits University at the time. I said, can your dad assist me? He says, yeah, no problem. Uncle Omar, as I call him, we sat with Mr. Slosh, and he says, listen, I'm going to offer the boy this. He says, no, you know this boy is better than this. He says, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. After 3 months, we'll review. Like, okay, I'm not listening to it. It's all white noise to me because I'm going to play professional football. And, like, I'm actually not ready for this, but this is what I want to do. It's not about the money. 3 months later, anyway, I score on debut. 2 games later, I score against Sundowns. So it's all just panning out. 3 months later, as he mentioned his word, he stuck to his word. 3 months later, I forget about this. 3 months later, you must pay me more money. We're going to relook at the contract. Calls me after training. John Lathan says, listen, Mr. Slosh wants to see you. Hop in my car. Let's go see him. Get there. Contract changes. I think jumped up to like $7,000-$8,000. Just like that, you know. So, and that's when I said, okay, maybe we can earn some money here, you know. So, yeah, it very quickly turned in the right direction for me.
One of the things with young footballers get a bit of money, and we've seen a lot in South Africa, often guys who come from poor backgrounds, don't have a finished education, don't have a financial education. The financial literacy is often not great. And bang, suddenly you've got someone who's making 20 grand a month and 12 of that is going on the new Golf 11 and some flash clothes. And that sense of financial propriety is just not there. And often through no fault of their own because they don't know any better. Suddenly they've got something they've never had before and they think it'll always be there. What were you like then? Did you reward yourself? Did you splash out on something when you suddenly rocketed up to 8,000 rand?
Can you believe it? You know what? Once again, coming from that household that's principled with humbleness, principled with you don't need to be the star in the room. You don't need to do things for other people. You get your confidence from yourself, so you don't need things to. That was always embedded in me. But having said that, as a footballer, you want to pay yourself back for the hard work. And then you look at your peers, and then they're dressing good, especially when I moved from Wits to Chiefs. And now it's the car park. It's a this. And you're a human being. You fall into, you conform to the norms of the industry. And to an extent, I wanted to have a good car. But I always knew that my first priority was to buy my mom a house. You know, that was always in the back of my mind. And the minute I seen some real money, and when I moved to Kaizer Chiefs, that's the first thing I done. You know, so yes and no. But now that I've lived the cycle of a footballing life, which is generally the lifespan of any person that works any other profession, it starts at 18, 19 and retires at 65. Sports people do it in a short space of time. So I've kind of learned and experienced that cycle. And it's easy to judge a footballer and say, listen, the first thing you do is buy a Golf GTI. But when you come from where we come from, all you want, you see that and you're like, damn, one day I want that. So everything, you're blinded by everything else because you don't have a financial education. You don't understand there's a depreciation in the asset. You don't understand it's a liability. It's not an asset. But you just want to get that. And I don't fault players for doing that. But there needs to come a stage where you're going to say, okay, enough. How long is this? I can't sign a bond of 20 years, but my contract is 3 years. As a sports person, you know. So it's difficult. I don't want to judge players because I understand that you need to look good and feel good and fit in. But there needs to come a stage. And the quicker you learn that, the better for you.
It's even more pressure, though, once you do what you did, which was, yes, it's great to be playing at Wits on your 8,000 rand a month, but then you move to Kaizer Chiefs and they're dropping off suitcases of cash at your new home in Sandhurst because you've become this massive football star. Yeah. And being a player in South Africa for Kaizer Chiefs is completely different to anything in sporting South Africa because you're no longer your own person.
Yeah.
You're, I don't say you're owned by the club, you certainly become part of the club, but you are owned by the fans, and which is great when you're playing well, but gee, they'll let you know about it when you don't. And I'm imagining that all of a sudden, Stigger wandering down to the shops on a Sunday morning in his pyjamas, you've got 60 people who want to grab a photo and say hello and point out that you missed a tackle in the 17th minute. Did it change overnight like that?
You know, I always knew that Kaizer Chiefs is a big team, but when you play for the team is only when you understand how big it is. You know, like we would travel to play a game in Durban, and I'm sure Airport Company South Africa was not happy when Kaizer Chiefs travels, because when you land, they literally have to have security at the airport. Like it's pandemonium, it's crazy, because different supporting clubs would come and, like, no flash at Kaizer Chiefs, but we used to win. We didn't know what was losing. So the fans were crazy. Durban, Cape Town, P, wherever we would play. But you only understand the magnitude of Kaizer Chiefs when you play for them, you know. And it obviously changed my life. It gave me the opportunity to play for Bafana. It gave me the springboard to go to Europe, you know. So I will forever be indebted to Kaizer Chiefs. But there's the good and the bad. As you mentioned, just don't play well. Now I can't go to that petrol station because they are howling at me. Yeah, this one, the coach, that one. Never at me, though. Sure, behind my back, it's me. But, it's just crazy to see the passion that South Africans have. And it's a passion that is not violent, which is
I can't say that. That is an extraordinary thing to have crazy. In the stands, Pirates and Chiefs fans all together. But you try and do that at a Manchester derby or with a Madrid derby or the Milan game.
Olympiakos and Panathinaikos. Please try that. Please try.
It is a wonderful element of South African football, and it creates this unique environment, which you got to experience. What was that very first Soweto derby like?
It's crazy. Yeah, it was crazy. I'll never forget. It was the year after the Ellis Park tragedy. Right, and this was the old FNB stadium, 90,000 plus. The change rooms were at the bottom of the stadium. It was the Telkom charity spectacular where four teams would play, and this is where teams would introduce the new signings. So they're going to introduce Stanton, Rowan Fernandez, all the new signings of that season. And I come up, and because of the tragedy, we all had doves in our hand. And then as I go in, and as we're moving up the tunnel from FNB, you just hear this pounding. Poof, 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 because our PRO at the time, Patko Mafane, would run on the field and people would expect the team to come out and it would go crazy. And this is my first derby. And I'm like, damn. Anyway, so we come up from the tunnel, and as we enter the field, this is like 9:30 in the morning. Because there's three games, right? It's two semis and then the final. And after 9 in the morning, 90,000 packed, FNB. And I come out, and the noise is so deafening, it's zinging in my ears. And I'm thinking, how am I going to communicate with my teammates here? And because I'm in shock, my dove flew out of my head. So anyway, that was my experience, and that was one of the games where, and these are the games where you actually make your name. In the big games, in the derbies, in the finals, if you do well for Kaizer Chiefs or Orlando Pirates in those games, this is where you cement your name and place your name in the hearts of the fans.
Which you did, and you are still remembered with enormous fondness, but also a little sadness that you had departed. The team would have kept you forever, but naturally a footballer has ambition, and you want to test yourself to as high a level as you can get to. How did the international path come about?
Yeah, it was a little bit bittersweet because I signed for Kaizer Chiefs for 3 years. In my second year, I was this close to signing for West Ham in England.
I remember you telling me this story.
Yeah, I was this close. And because of how it was handled, I just wasn't happy. So the third year, I was like, listen, I'm not renewing my contract, even though in my 3 years, we won, I think, like 9 trophies, including the Mandela Cup, which is the Confederations Cup. And I was loving my life at Kaizer Chiefs, loving the fame and the team and where my game has how it evolved under a top coach in Mushin Edugal. So I was not unhappy. But then when you get a taste of Europe, when you get a taste when you're playing for a national team, when you play the Olympics and you're rubbing shoulders with Ronaldinho and you're beating Brazil, you're like, listen, there's more than this. I love this, but there's more. I need to live in a different country. I want to play at the highest level. And for me, that was it. It wasn't, yes, how Chiefs handled the West Ham thing never sat well with me. But I brushed it off. It was always that I want to play overseas. And then at the end of the third year at Kaizer Chiefs, I had multiple offers. Unfortunately, when England comes knocking, it can only knock once. It doesn't knock again. But then I had options in Portugal, in Belgium, in Russia, and I chose to go to Russia. Financially, it was sound because I was 25 going on 26. Eventually, you can't live on the 8,000 rand, you know what I'm saying? So you got to, yeah, and that decision was why I wanted to play in Europe and just experience and be a citizen or not a citizen and live in a different culture in a different city.
I remember chatting to our mutual friend Matthew Booth, the King of Cheesecake, about the challenge of playing in Russia and the very simple one beyond any language or culture or the allure of lots of very attractive ladies who'd like to meet you on the internet is that the temperature over winter, particularly with some of the games as you head more Siberia way, you're playing in snow and well below zero.
Yeah.
And when you're used to the African sunshine, that's something quite different.
They're tricky, and I'm sure Matthew would tell you that they invite Brazilians and African players in June in summer, where it's 32 degrees for 3 months. And then it just nosedives. But anyway, so that's a massive challenge, just mentally. But it doesn't take you long to adapt to the weather, you know. You're obviously dressing warm, but after 5-10 minutes, then the layers come off. You're like, okay, I'm here, I'm going to play. Not easy. I'll never forget the first game I played when I came back in January. I'm on the bench. So I put the water on the field and we're watching the game. So it's second half. As I'm leaving to the change room, pick the water up and the bottom of the water is frozen. Frozen. Like it's in the fridge, a deep freezer. Frozen. I'm like, okay, what did I, where well, am I? Doing what am here? I doing here?
But yeah, you got through it and the football was certainly a success, but also the breadth of cultural experience. When you look back on that time, how much do you feel you learned about such a very different part of the world?
Yeah, it was awesome because you have friends and teammates from across the world. My best friend was Argentinian. He spoke Spanish. I spoke English. We had to find a medium of communication, and it had to be Russian. So we speak in broken Russian to each other. One of the Russians comes in. He says, hey, что говорит, блядь? What are you speaking here? Like you Spanish, you English. Anyway, so you find it's a survival instinct that kicks in. So you got to open yourself up at the age of 25 to learn a new language. You are stuck in your ways. And this is the amazing thing of a human being. When you find yourself in a situation, there's a survival instinct that kicks in. That you okay, I need to go to the store. I need to ask for bread. How do I do that? I need to learn the language. So the first time I go there, I'm pointing, and that's not going to last. So I needed to, okay, what is bread? Chleb. Okay, what is this? What is that? And then eventually, once you're able to communicate, everything else falls into place, and then you're thinking, okay, what do Russian guys speak about? And you just realize that what Dan and I speak about on a round of golf is exactly what the two Russian guys that you don't understand what they're saying, they speak about the same thing. And that's the beautiful thing of the human being.
I remember Scott Berger talking about moving to Japan and his wife, Shelley, sending him out to get some milk for their relatively young baby. And he came back an hour later with nothing because he couldn't work out what milk was in a Japanese supermarket. And in the short term, it's all a little terrifying and then can throw you. But those are the kind of moments that you look back on. You go, gee, that was both quite funny, but also this is how I learn about the rest of the world.
It's easier now, Google Translate, but back then there was nothing
not
like
so
that.
Much. And then, of course, we spoke about Greece a little earlier. Yeah. I get to go back most years, spend some time with the family. I remember before I went for the very first time, my father-in-law, Agathokli, assuring me that Greece was the greatest place in the world and that clouds were illegal and they didn't have waves and the food was better than anywhere else. And I remember thinking very politely, Agathokli, I'm sure it's very nice, but I have traveled the world. Yes. Yeah, I think you might be overselling it a bit. And I apologized to him when I got back because it was the best holiday I'd ever had, and that remains the case. And yes, you're there to play football in a very passionate footballing country, but you're also experiencing one of the great historic cultures of the world.
Beautiful. I have to agree with him. The food is the best. The food is absolutely the best. You know, once again, coming from nuclear, my palate is very standard. So the travels obviously opens it up a bit. But I never thought I would eat a bar of feta cheese as big as this and add some olive oil and pepper.
A little bit of oregano.
Yes, and then just eat it like that. And then 4 months into my stay, I'm like, damn, I'm eating cheese just like that.
So there is a wonderful simplicity to so much about Greece, and food is a wonderful example of that, where we'll sit in my wife's village and breakfast will be bread that's been baked in the village with feta that's been made in the village, with oregano grown in the village, olive oil made in the village, and some fresh tomatoes made in the village. And just that blast of freshness, you can understand why the average age of people in Greece is 170.
Awesome. You go to a taverna and they literally make the wine there. You know, there's no menu. It's what's there today. It's just awesome. But I think Greece is special for me because yes, it's beautiful and people only know Santorini and Mykonos. But how many islands are there? Over a thousand.
Over a thousand.
Like,
it's the mainland as much as the islands. Yeah. And my wife's from the mainland and around that Kalamata, Peloponnesos area.
Kalamati, okay.
So awesome. Beautiful.
Yes, so Chalkidiki for me was like you honestly think you're in heaven.
That is lovely.
Yeah, but why it's so special for me is my daughter's name is Athena, by the way. So Greece is...
Is this a David Beckham thing where child was conceived in Athens, she becomes Athena?
Yes.
Which is why your second child is called McDonald's in a car
park
just outside
Moscow. Oh, my word. Anyway, so let's get serious right then. So why it's so special for me is that I think I evolved from being a footballer and doing footballer things, womanizing, clubbing, dressing with the brands, you know, where you just come down to earth. Greece, I stayed in a village called Katarini in the north, close to Thessaloniki, right? And literally, it's not who your friends are, what you drive, what you wear. Like, people are just people. Yes, I'm the pectara and the footballer, but that aside, people are just so simple. And I think it gave me a harsh lesson in reality, you know? And this is where, after spending a year in Greece, I told my wife, I said, listen, go make wedding plans. I needed to make a change, and I think Greece was that for me. Besides, footballing-wise, it was where the experienced Tigger was playing football. And I played some of my best football in Greece. I've evolved as a person, a husband, and I think it was just, I was there with the financial crisis, and if it wasn't that, I think I would have been staying in Greece till today.
Well, I think that would have given me more reason to get over regularly. Come and hang out.
I never would have met Dan Nichol.
Stigalidis.
Stigalidis.
You were Panathinaikos. No, you played against Panathinaikos, sorry. But you had some of those big derbies in Greece.
Yeah.
How did they compare to a Soweto derby?
It's crazy. Like with PAOK and Aris, they don't allow the opposing fans to attend the game.
Anywhere near each other.
Yeah, don't. Yeah, it's only home fans. Yeah, it's crazy. But they're so passionate. And so whenever you go for dinner, this is the funny thing, you go for dinner, and now you want to pay, and they're like, no, your money's no good. I'm like, no, but I like this restaurant. I want to come here all the time. So when I come here, you're going to think, okay, you're coming because you're not paying. Now I must find a new restaurant. But that is the passion of the people. And yeah, it was just an awesome time.
It formed part of the international experience, and if you haven't realized, today's show is brought to you by the Greek Tourism Authority as we promote our shared favorite country. But the international experience also extended to the games you played for South Africa, and you had the Bafana experience, and then you also had that Olympic experience, which was a very special team playing against some extraordinary players. And I think of all the footballing chapters, when I look at the career of Stiga that rolled out, that looked like one of the most exciting.
Yeah, it has to be, because it was just before I went to Grasshopper Zurich. It was picked up by Grasshopper Zurich. But I think as for the fans, football fans that will remember, we played under 20 World Cup. And the bulk of that team now, it's no longer, okay, we're playing against Henry, we're playing against Anelka, playing against Michael Owen. Okay, it's no more the stars. We are here now. And that's how we evolved to under-23s, which is the Olympic team. And we went in there thinking and knowing we can win because we had qualities. Benny McCarthy was now in Europe. Siyabonga Nambete was at Udinese. Quinton Fortune is at Manchester United. Emil Baran is at in Norway, number one. You know, so we're okay, listen, you've grown, we've also grown. Let's see what we can do. And remember, we had the success of 96. And we were supposed to be the predecessors. So here's a stage where we can say, okay, Safa, here we are. Okay, world, here we are. We want to play in Europe. For the players that's not in Europe at this point in time, this is the shop window. We need to go and perform. And that's exactly what we've done coming up against Brazil, as you rightfully mentioned, with the Ronaldinho, the next Ronaldo. And yeah, I think you can still find him in Matthew Booth's pocket and Fabian McCarthy's pocket. But anyway, we beat them 3-1, and I think that game just gave us the understanding that, listen, we can compete with the best.
I mean, I still today don't think we give enough consequence to that game and to that result. Here's a group of South Africans, young South Africans, who are taking on a team with Ronaldo and Ronaldinho and a whole pile of other great players, as they were to become, getting beaten 3-1 by South Africa. It's such a big result.
The unfortunate thing is that we never went on to then become the senior team as a whole.
Why was that?
It's, this is...
I've always blamed you, but let's see what your answer is.
Yeah, it's just the structures were not right, and today, we sit here today, we qualified for the World Cup in the US, and we are slowly on the ascendancy. But it had to reach a point where we were rock bottom. And the reason for that is that the administration never had foresight in football terms. And clearly, financially and strategically, administratively, they are clueless. And I love podcasts because you can say what you want to. And this is where it's at, Dan. That is why we never filtered in and then continued on the success of the 96. Continued on the success of the team that went to France for the first World Cup. And unfortunately, that is why if you're not a football fan, you won't understand that there was a generation after the Mark Williams and the Sean Bartletts and the Shoes Moshoyos and the Lucas Radebes that were possibly better than them, and it would have put us on. And the guys coming behind us was just as good. It was a Nassif Morris, Tsova Lekazi, the Derek Spencers. You know, it was... But if your house is not in order on top, it cannot filter down to the field. And Safa is there to see where it's at right now. But fortunately... Football is on the rise, and this is simply because the love of football, coaches are more educated, there's more academies, So proper development is taking place, and that is why we can compete under 20s. And I say it's the beginning because we cannot be happy with just qualifying. We cannot be happy with just getting through. We need to now go to the next level and say, okay, we can be the next, the number one in Africa. We should be with what we have in South Africa, you know. So, yes, we see the positivity. We see the progress. And hopefully the administration will now align with that and let the money filter into those areas of development so that we can have consistent performances at the high level.
The immediate reference point for the general South African sports fan on a World Cup is rugby and the Springboks, and we see what they have done to South Africa, which is such a bipolar nation. We're either, this is the greatest country in the world, we love it, everything's fantastic, or it's all falling apart, I'm moving to New Zealand tomorrow, I can't take this anymore. There's very rarely a middle ground in South Africa. The potential, and we look back to 2010, where we had a couple of decent games, but because we were hosting it, South Africa was floating like rarely before or since. If this Bafana team can go over to Mexico and to America and pull off a couple of results, get through to the next round, possibly one beyond that, the impact that could have in South Africa is staggering. And they do seem to have a coach who came in, and I don't think there was a huge amount of belief for most football fans.
No. Even for myself, not a lot.
Because let's face it, Safa hasn't always been the best at picking the person for the job or supported the person in the job, which I think is probably the most important part. And then we don't have guys playing week in, week out in the Premier League, with possibly one exception. We don't have a huge number of big names playing across Europe. This was mostly a local squad, in some cases always a local squad, who were just playing really good football.
Yeah, credit to Hugo Bruce and credit to the players. I'd love to see more players move to Europe so that when you look at that team sheet and you see the teams you're playing for, it's all abroad. But take nothing away from South African teams. It just shows you the strength of the PSL. But like we are not ready for how big and how massive Bafana can be when they are competing at the World Cup. And football is different to rugby. Like if you're going to win the World Cup, there's a lot of work that needs to be done. Right, but for us to go to the World Cup and do well and go to the quarters and go to the semis, which is a realistic goal, like we will not understand how big Bafana can be because as bad as we've been doing, if you look at the broadcasting numbers, yes, we love rugby. But rugby doesn't come close to a semi-final of an African Nations Cup, never mind the World Cup. But how the Springboks are managed, how they are branded, how they are marketed, how they are celebrated, yes, because of the success. It is exactly the dynamics of our country, 20% white, 80% black, right? And it is so big. Imagine 80% find success and is managed properly, right? I'm not saying we don't want to support the Boca. We love the Boca. We want to do the Boca. But if Safa can just say, hey, guys, that book that you have there, what are you doing? How does Fly Safe sponsor Springboks and the Proteas, but they don't sponsor Bafana? Maybe Bafana is too blind to say, okay, guys, knock on their door, say, guys, you're out here, you're out there, why are you not here? Then you can get some money because you ran away with all the money with the World Cup. But anyway, like if it just gets itself together, market it properly, we're not going to be the Springboks overnight. But let's have a plan. And it will be what South Africa is. We love sport. We buy polo. It will be up and down. But we will be there punching. I always say a bad Springbok era is when we are third or fourth in the world. That's when we are. We're like, guys, what are we doing?
We're at our lowest.
What are we doing? Like, you got to love that, you know? Like, if football can just take a leaf out of the book, because we are all South Africans. What you are doing, and it's working there. Your Craven Week, like, why don't we have Craven Week in football? You know, so, yeah, it's guys, please, come on.
We've seen in football people like Patrice Motsepe with Sundowns, Johan Rupert with Stellenbosch. We've seen a lot of investment in football. I think that's part of the reason why we're seeing an improvement in quality. It still completely baffles me that the football team I'm supporting today, that's based out of Pietermaritzburg, can have a completely different name and be playing in Kimberley next week. And that element does absolutely no good to football at all. But that is the mad, bizarre space in which we live. But the quality of the football that we're seeing, which has translated into Bafana, makes it, I think, a more appealing space for a lot of people to get involved with. Is there a role for Stiga, for Matthew Booth, for Fabian McCarthy to get more involved, to become part of the solution to the broader administrative problem, lend the weight of your experience to how do we make this whole better and ensure that the team that goes onto the field has got everything they need by the time that whistle starts?
I would love nothing else but to be part of the structures, administratively, leadership-wise, not only myself, but if Lucas Radebe, the ambassador of Leeds in England, is a threat to SAFA, who am I? You know, who am I? Who's Matthew? Who's Brian Baloyi? If Lucas can't get it right, we have no chance. But we have to keep on trying, because that is the only way it can come. I'm not saying a footballer knows what to do, how to do, because your degree, your master's, your honors is in football space. Nobody can tell you otherwise, right? So all you got to do is have the person there that understands the game, and then you'll get the intellect, the marketer. You'll get the chartered accountant that says, okay, maybe let's not charter the flight. Let's look at it differently because our coffers are not as big, you know. But the football must be the decision and then the business. They say football is a business, right? But you cannot put business decisions before football. It needs to be the footballing decisions before the business, you know. And SAFA is a business. The PSL is a business, successful business. So as a footballer, I would love nothing more than to be in those ranks. But I've certainly taken my steps to ownership in a small part. And from next year, I'll be part of the UEFA Masters in Administration. So I do want to educate myself more integrally so that I can eventually, you never know, be in the structures. It's not my number one goal, but I just want to be educated. And if I can utilize it and assist somebody or something on the side for a game that has changed my life and given me so much, I would do it without blinking.
Football would be better off for it. I mentioned at the top of the show that there is the element of the Roman Abramovich of Botswana, because that's also part of what you're doing. You're growing football across the border and having, by all accounts, quite a big influence.
Yeah, an opportunity arose. We've formed an entity. We've attracted some investors, and we do own a team. The name of the team is Moshodi Center Chiefs, myself and my partner. And the dynamics are a little bit different because in Africa, the ownership has a different a way of structuring it. There's a society that would retain part of the club, but we're learning. But what I want to do there, what we're busy doing, is that just instill the structures, because I come from institutions. I have experience in Europe. I have experience for playing for Kaizer Chiefs, because Kaizer Chiefs is run like no differently to a team in Europe, like in terms of administration, organization, marketing. Everything is as good as Europe, because I've been on the other side. I understand that what Chiefs is doing is second to none. So that experience that I have and the basic fundamentals, we're trying to instill it there. And then hopefully we could make a difference. And eventually the goal in the next coming years is to participate in CAF, may it be Confederations or the Champions League, but one step at a time.
So if in a decade Botswana knock Bafana out of the Africa Cup of Nations, we've got you to blame, Stanton Fredericks.
Ish, yeah, I'll take that. I wouldn't want that, though, but yeah.
Before we let you go, because you've got your seventh round of golf of the week to play, and it's only Tuesday, you have got such an extraordinary career to look back on with a great deal of pride, and very rightly so. Are you able, from all of those games, from the big games, the Chiefs, the games in Russia, in Switzerland, Greece, yeah, the Olympics, the games you played for your country, to pick just one of them that for you is the one that as you close your eyes at night and fall asleep, there are still memories of it dancing through your mind?
Sure. Yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot. Playing against Galatasaray in the Europa Cup, and just what happened to Liverpool a few weeks ago, I was just smiling because the fans are shooting crackers, making sure you don't sleep, singing chants there, and giving you a difficult time. Playing there was a special experience, but there's so many. But if there's one that will stand out, is in Fos Loros, under-23s. We cannot draw, we cannot lose. We're playing against Ghana. I'm talking of a Ghana with Laria Kingston, Stephen Appiah, like a proper Ghana
this
side.
This is a solid team.
A solid team. And if we do not win, we do not go to the Olympics. And I scored the only goal. We beat them 1-0 in Fos Loros. And I think There's a picture that I have where I've scored and I'm celebrating. And that moment for me will remain with me till the day I close my eyes.
And not too many people who are at the top of their list of life achievements have Fos Loros.
Fos Loros.
But for Stanton Fredericks, it's right up there with the Greek island.
Here we go.
Stigger, it's been lovely running through this terrific story of yours. Tip of the hat to your mum and your grandmother, who I think can be very proud of the man they guided into the space you are now. My only criticism would be the regularity with which you beat me on the golf course, but I'm hoping that will change in due course. And I also really do hope, I'm not sure what the exact nature of structure would be, but to have guys like yourself more involved in the administration of South African football, having a real feel for the game and how it works at the highest level, could only help us. Hopefully that happens. And maybe in the interim, we find a nice golf course followed by a couple of beers in Mexico City ahead of a road trip to cheer Bafana on at a World Cup.
That'll be awesome. You still owe me Leopard Creek, by the way. But yeah, but Dan, yeah, just always just sitting next to you, chatting. You never know, are you serious or you're laughing. But always a pleasure to be in your company, to be on your platform. And just to call you a mate, we thank you and we are grateful for you.
There we go. And that's the seventh take of that after I wrote that out for Stigger to wrap up the show. Stanton Fredericks.
Malakis.
One of the modern greats of South African football, a star at Kaizer Chiefs, a star across Europe, the man who Ronaldinho and Ronaldo still get nightmares about, and somebody who now is hopefully only just beginning the next part of a great football journey. My guest this week on The Dan Nicholls Show, Stanton Fredericks.
You're listening to The Dan Nicholls Show.